The reading this morning is from Genesis chapter 16, starting at verse 1. Now Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abraham, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go, sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Abraham agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarah said to Abraham, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your servant is in your hands," Abraham said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarah ill-treated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarah, where have you come from and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah," she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now with child and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility towards all his brothers." She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. "You are the God who sees me," for she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." That is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. It is still there between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abraham a son, and Abraham gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael.
Lovely. Thank you, Audrey. We're continuing our series looking at Abraham. He's, as I've said before, he's a vital part of understanding the whole Bible because he's the father of all those who believe, it says in Romans, that we have so much to learn from him. He's the only person ever called a friend of God in Isaiah as well. So it's really important to learn from him. And here we have a dilemma. He has a decision to make. And this morning's called impatience, but it could equally be called waiting. But it's one of those things. When you've got an important decision, do you like to wait? Who's good at waiting here? And if you're good at waiting, do you enjoy waiting? You know, when you're hungry and you're in maybe a restaurant or something like that, and you think, well, you know, I'm starving hungry, but I think I'd like to wait a little bit longer. Do you ever say that? No, I'll enjoy it so much more when it finally comes. Do you say that? You don't, do you? Because, you know, when an appetite or a need is there, we want to deal with it straight away. That's human nature. And we all face dilemmas. We all face decisions. And I remember, I mean, I thought these were pearls of wisdom from my grandfather, but apparently this is just something that everybody knows, that God helps those that help themselves. And I thought that was just him, but actually the whole, all of our society lives according to this, don't they? Actually, that there's that sense that we need to just, if something needs doing, we need to sort it out ourselves. If this is my problem, if this is my mess, I'm going to deal with it. And so we have this kind of illusion that we know what we should do. Ah, I know what to do. I've done something like this before. Perhaps even God helped me in this way before. So that's obviously how he's going to do it again. And so we have this sense, this confidence, this self-confidence that we can sort things out. And that God will probably approve of our actions. Or at least he'll help us clear up the mess when it all goes pear-shaped. That's the kind of way that we go about things. And of course, in a perfect world, if we made a wrong choice, there wouldn't be any mess, there wouldn't be any consequences, there wouldn't be any drawbacks at all. Unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect world, do we? And so when we make a wrong decision, there's usually a ton of consequences. Interestingly, as we saw right at the beginning of our journey with Abraham, even when we make right decisions, there are consequences, aren't there? There are things that we need to leave behind. There are things that have to change. So, essentially, the nature of a decision is that things are going to change. And I think at the time I talked about the word decadere. The Latin word for decision, decadere, is to cut off. You know, you have an incision is cutting into. A decision is cutting off. As soon as you make a proper decision, you're not drawing a line in the sand, but more like in cement, because you can't go back. So when Abraham becomes a Hebrew and he crosses the river, he becomes this person who is following God. He's made a decision. There's no turning back, as we sung that very first week. But Abraham has got this dilemma. In the previous chapter, we've seen that he has this back and forth with God and says, I don't have a child. You know, Eliezer, my servant, is going to inherit everything. And God says, no, it's going to be someone from your own body sharing your DNA. Look at the stars and all of that kind of thing. He makes this promise. Then he makes this covenant with him so that he's absolutely sure that this is going to take place. He's 86 years old. Well, he's 85 years old, I guess, because he's 86 by the time Ishmael is born. And he's still childless. You know, this is 10 years after the previous chapter. Time has marched on. He's not getting any younger. I don't think any of us are, actually, unless you're a Time Lord. Then we all get older, and he's still childless. And Sarah, she's working on this. She's smart, because she says, God made Abraham a promise that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars of the sky. He didn't say my descendants, but Abram's descendants. So perhaps if I give him Hagar, then he will have descendants who share his DNA. I'm helping God fulfill his promise. This is perfect. You see, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? She's not going against what God said. She's just not finding out what God said. And that's part of the problem, isn't it? That when we do that, it might not be wrong, but it might not be in reference to God at all. And so she does this thing that is entirely culturally okay, to give your servant to, you know, to your husband. He marries her, she becomes his wife. That's all fine. Until Moses, you know, monogamy was not, there was no problem with many wives. So that, you know, that's culturally, that's fine. And so she says, I've worked out a solution. We need to pursue God's promise. We need to get active about this. And there's this whole thing. I don't know whether you encounter this. When you talk to people about, I'm waiting for a door to open. Do you push doors? And if you push a door and it doesn't open, do you push harder? How do you know it's the right door? I mean, if the door's open, how do you know? I mean, there's doors that are open. I don't walk into other people's houses because their door was open. Can you see what I mean? But we have this kind of sort of pseudo-Christian sort of idea of pushing doors or not pushing doors, or, you know, push harder, or, you know, all this kind of thing. And it's all rationalization about our temperament. Some of us like to go and sort things out. Some of us like to wait. So let's just be honest and say it doesn't really matter whether you're the kind of person that likes to sort things out or the kind of person that likes to wait. If you ask God, then you'll be all right. Ask God, is this the door? Rather than go, well, I'm going to push it and see if I fall through it. Because it might just be unlocked. You know, doors are sometimes, aren't they? And so let's not have that kind of thing where we just allow circumstances suddenly to, you know, tell us what God says. Why don't we just ask? I mean, there's a thought. And it's an interesting thing because, and obviously we have the benefit of hindsight. And so we might kind of cluck our tongues and go, Abraham, what a dummy. We might do that until we think back to our last blunder. And then we kind of go, you know what, I'm going to just shut up. I'm going to stop throwing stones because I'm not without sin. Because we all make mistakes, don't we? Anyone here that doesn't? I'm just checking. Anyone needs to see a doctor or anything? No, of course, we've all made mistakes. We've all taken wrong turns, sometimes willfully and rebelliously and stupidly, you know, because there is a kind of idiocy of sin that makes us do stuff that is really not very sensible. But sometimes they're well-intentioned, aren't they? We try and do our best, and we just get it wrong. That happens too, doesn't it? There's a lovely Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. Calvin and Hobbes is a little boy, and I think it's a tiger. And they get into little things. And there's this picture of Calvin and Hobbes, little boy and a tiger, up a very high tree, right at the very end of a very, very thin branch. And the little boy is saying, why is it that dumb stuff seems so sensible at the time? Have you ever asked yourself that question? Perhaps you should ask it again. Because it's one of those things we find ourselves, it seems to make perfect sense at the time. And then we kind of go, how did I get here? And how on earth am I going to get back without a big fall? And that's the problem that we have. Because let's face it, Abraham and Sarah must have quite a good relationship. Because Sarah pipes up to Abraham and says, I've thought of this solution. It's a very trusting solution for Sarah, isn't it, to give Hagar to Abraham. And for Abraham to listen to this and give it kind of mental airspace and kind of go, yeah, maybe that is the way that God wants to answer our prayers. And of course, a year later, when Hagar is pregnant and about to give birth, they must be like, well, we pushed the door opened, Hagar's expecting. God must have answered our prayers. That must have been God's will, mustn't it? Have you ever tried to twist or rationalize circumstances to say what God's will was? I have. And if you want a thing bad enough, like having a child when you're in your 80s, when it's too late, then you try and work things out. And it's not until verse 6 in this chapter that God is even mentioned. And even then, it's by Sarah who says, you know, Hagar now despises me. Let the Lord judge between us. You shouldn't have taken her. And he's going, hang on, what? How did this happen? It was your idea. But neither of them actually asked, did they? Neither of them found out what God wanted. You know, you have chapter 15, which is in such stark contrast. You have this amazing back and forth that we saw last week or the week before between God and Abraham. A real conversation which seldom happens between men and God in the Bible. But here in chapter 15, we have this wonderful to and fro. Nearly every other verse is this conversation. And then the following chapter, nothing. Until verse 6, where suddenly, you know, Sarah starts invoking the Lord to judge Abraham for being so stupid as to follow her advice, you know, and this kind of thing. And you think, whoa, we need to just sort of, you know, see what God was doing and see what people were doing and judge between them that way. Do you see what I mean? And so there's verse 2, I think, is the kind of central kind of point of the whole chapter, because it says Abram listened to the voice of Sarah, not the voice of God, but the voice of Sarah. Sarah was saying something completely acceptable. It made perfect sense. It was acceptable in the culture. You know, it wasn't going against God's promise at all, but it was the voice of Sarah, not the voice of God. And that's the big difference. So the consequences follow up pretty quickly. Verse 4, you have this contempt because in the culture of that day, I mean, you've got to kind of cast your mind back thousands of years, sort of nomadic, very primitive sort of people with scarce resources, no welfare state, anything like that. You've got a barren woman who's old and she's using resources and contributing nothing. That's basically how Sarah would have been seen. And now Hagar, who's this Egyptian slave, suddenly she is going to be bearing Abram's heir. And so she's got status now, hasn't she? So it says, she looked on Sarah with contempt. She belittled her. She despised her. And that's the kind of thing that happens when sin and selfishness and self-rule comes into a relationship. You get conflict. You get bitterness. You get pride and competitiveness. And yet, Hagar was also the innocent victim. She was acting out against Sarah, but let's face it, she had no say in the matter, did she? She was just given to Abram. She was the innocent victim of this as well. Can you see that as soon as we start making our own way and using our common sense, what's culturally acceptable, chances are there's going to be collateral damage. There's going to be discord and conflict because of that disobedience. And yet, even though she's not the one that God's promise was about, God sees her and God speaks to her and God cares for her. He gives us this promise saying about Ishmael, he's going to be a wild donkey of a man. Now, we might say that in kind of derogatory terms, but in that culture, again, a wild donkey is something that's strong and living free and independent. It's actually saying, you know, he's going to be a real go-getter. He's going to be his own man. He's going to do well. He's going to thrive. But he's also going to be at odds with just about everyone he meets. But he's going to have that kind of strength in his life. And so she says, he's the God who sees me. And she calls the well that as well. And again, you kind of, just by inference, you kind of get some little insights into Abram. Abram listened to Sarah and, you know, took it on board. Abram also must have listened to Hagar. Because God spoke to Hagar and said, you're going to call him Ishmael. But later on that year, when the child was born, it says Abram called him Ishmael. So Hagar must have said, you know what, I was so sick of you and Sarah banging on at me and living in this conflicted and divisive and strife-filled household that I ran away. Thanks for noticing, by the way. But God noticed and he spoke to me and he said that this son is going to be called Ishmael. And Abram says, all right then. And so when the child is born, he calls him Ishmael. He listened to Hagar as well as to Sarah. And eventually he gets round to listening to God again, which is where he starts to get it right. It's all about timing in this. God had made a promise. It was never in doubt. But it's all about timing. By the time Ishmael arrived, Abram was 86 years old. By the time Isaac is born, he's 100. 14 years of unfulfilled promise. That's a long wait. Have you waited for anything that long? I don't think I have. Someone has. But we need to trust God because we only see what we see. I remember when Simon a few years back did a kind of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Bible. And it was really good. He used the metaphor of Google Maps. You know what I mean by Google Maps. Being able to zoom out. Or zoom in. You know, you can zoom in and have the street view and you can actually kind of see just what's there. And that's the way that we travel through life, isn't it? But God is able to zoom out and he's able to see the whole journey. He's able to see the whole earth. His perspective is entirely different. And so if we want a successful journey without lots of cul-de-sacs and wrong turns, let's ask him. He's got the perspective that we need, doesn't he? And so it's good to listen to one another, but not if it's at the expense of listening to God. We listen to God first and listen to one another and share that perspective. And so in our culture, our 21st century prayer, Lord, hurry up! We need to learn to wait. You know, here we see impatience. You know, not wanting to wait. It's difficult to wait. The Bible doesn't say, oh, waiting's fun or waiting's easy. But it does say, wait on the Lord. It does say God can be trusted. It does say he sees the beginning from the end and the end from the beginning. Can you? I can't. And if that's the case, then it's better to trust him than it is to trust me. Because I can only see what I can see. And I can only think with the, you know, the little bit that's between my ears. And so I get it wrong. He never gets it wrong. But sometimes, even when we're walking right, there's a wait, isn't there? And why? Well, I think partly to help us slow down, to wean us off our self-reliance and our independence. Because sometimes there's a madness that takes hold of you. Have you ever been in a shop and you see a thing, you didn't even know you needed it, but you need it now? You know, there's this thing. And me and Bev have had this thing that whenever, particularly if it's a big ticket item, if it's something that, you know, you just kind of go, oh, like that. That's the time when you leave the shop and walk around the block, and then you go, do we even want to go back in the shop? We've saved so much money, we should be millionaires by now. The amount of times we walk around the block and just kind of, actually, we don't need that. What will we do with that? You know, after the novelty's worn off. That's the first thing. Walk a little bit slower. Take time. Don't stress and rush about everything. We don't need to stress and rush about everything. I remember reading a book years ago called The Tyranny of the Urgent. And that's what urgency is. Urgent doesn't mean it's important. It just means that it's clamoring at you right now and you've got to do something about it. But chances are it's probably not very important at all. And that if you left it, it wouldn't matter. And so we need to slow down a little bit. We need to ask God for increased patience. I know that's just such a dumb prayer in so many ways. Lord, give me patience. And he says, wait. No, I mean now. And that's the trouble with that one, isn't it? But so often we need to just calm our spirits down. We need to remind ourselves that God is sovereign, that God can see it all. Listen to these words from Philippians 4 from the Message. Don't fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray. Let petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. And before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness, everything coming together for good, will come and settle you down. It's wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. And that's what we can learn, isn't it? Instead of being impatient, let's settle ourselves. Let's calm ourselves down. Look up and listen. Look up and listen. He's got the kind of zoomed out perspective, and we can trust him. When we do that, we walk in a better way, a different way. And it does, in fact, increase our appetite for the good thing that's going to come. It will come. If he's promised, it will come. And if you've made your order in the restaurant or whatever, it will come. And it will be so much better, and you'll appreciate it so much more just for that little extra wait. So can I encourage you, as it says in the Psalms, wait on the Lord. Be still and wait for him.